Multiple bottom line reports to cover today, including massive flip-flopping going on and being studied at the Federal Reserve. Could this change everything? We'll also preview this week's press conference from the Fed. We'll discuss the implications of the UAW strikes. How much is it going to cost and which two companies could actually benefit the most? We'll talk about Ukraine. We'll talk Tesla. We'll talk government shutdown. And we'll talk about Trump talking Fed and VP candidate and more. First up, Mark Cuban was fished. And no, I don't mean reeled in by a fishing rod. I mean fishing scammed. Apparently, he downloaded a compromised version of MetaMask, making him the latest victim of phishing attacks that are super popular in the crypto community. Apparently, he lost up to $870,000. Keep in mind, just linking your wallet to something like MetaMask doesn't automatically compromise its integrity. Generally, you'd have to go as far as signing some form of contract to reveal your private key. However, that could just be a few buttons deeper. So beware what you're linking with your crypto wallets, and as usual, keep the vast majority of your crypto off wallet and keep it on a hard, cold, physical wallet, so that way you limit that potential. Now, regarding the UAW, strikes began Friday at the big three, Ford, GM, and Stellantis.
We need a good pay for our families. We produce great quality, good products, and everything else. We can't even afford the products. Yep. So, anyways, if they look at the, if you do the math, it would take like $4 billion to give us the raise. But they're willing to risk it for $5 billion to lay people off and strike. It's corporate greed.
Up to 13,000 workers went on strike, specifically at Ford Michigan's Bronco SUV facility, GM Chevy Colorado's pickup facility in Missouri, and Stellantis' Ohio plant that builds the Jeep Wranglers. Legacy automakers face a huge problem because they have to spend massive amounts of money to transition their companies from gas legacy automakers to EVs. Consider that right now, Tesla has nearly 60% of all electric vehicle sales in America. And even though that's down slightly over the last couple of years, the pie is expanding very rapidly, and Tesla continues to have over half of the entire market. GM literally has just 6% of the market. Ford, 5% of the market. And these companies need to invest billions of dollars into new factories, like Ford throwing $7 billion into just one new factory, just to try to transition to actual profitable electric vehicles. Keep in mind, GM does not expect to be profitable on electric vehicles until at least 2025, Ford until at least 2026. Problem now, though, is union leaders are asking for a 40% wage increase over the four-year life of a newly negotiated contract. When we hear 40%, it sounds like a lot. But remember UPS. UPS approved a 55% pay raise just weeks ago for certain employees over a five-year term. But when you consider that these individuals hadn't seen pay raises since 2019, you're actually talking about pay raises over an 8 to 9 year period amounting to about 55%. When you compound that out, you're looking at about a 4 to 5% annual pay increase. The difference, though, is that UPS and the logistics industry has grown exponentially thanks to COVID, whereas legacy automakers are facing a shrinking industry, massive burdens of old pensions, and now the desire to transition to electric vehicles with these burdens. It's very difficult, especially since now unions are asking for a 40% wage increase. They've negotiated down to maybe about a 35% wage increase, still looking for a 32-hour work week and a restoration of cost of living adjustments, as well as other pension demands. Problem with this is now you have 13,000 workers going on strike. And Ford, for example, is complaining that, look, if we can't get the final parts out of these factories to at least weather the strikes for the next few weeks, we're going to have to conduct layoffs. And that's exactly what Ford just did. Ford just laid off 600 workers. Now, usually, if you go on strike and you get laid off, you're going to set the company up for a massive lawsuit. To me, this is somewhat of a sign that these companies have no choice, that they're backed into a corner. that they have increasing costs at every level of their business, decreasing competitiveness at every level of their business. And even though these companies have offered 20% wage increases, unions are looking for that mid-30s number. Just like Wedbush here says, accepting anything north of a 20% pay increase over the life of the contract would be a tough pill to swallow for the business model of GM, for example, but this is true for a lot of businesses. But the ones who are likely to win are Tesla and Rivian, given that both of these companies are non-union. Of course, it turns out that potentially 600 workers who weren't actually on strike got laid off. So it's kind of like, if you go on strike, we'll fire that person. Huh? It's crazy. All of this is leading industry experts to suggest that no matter what happens with the United Auto Workers strike, Elon Musk is the true winner here. This is a cover in the Wall Street Journal where they literally say the billionaire tycoon isn't even involved in these strikes, yet he's the one winning. And any wage increases further advance Tesla's already tremendous cost advantage over its peers. Now, some folks get frustrated when they hear that Tesla might be paying less. So I threw together this tweet that I think really encompasses what's going on here. I stated, I guarantee you there's one office winning big during the UAW strikes. And it's Tesla's human resource department. The highest quality, highest working, brightest legacy auto workers will likely apply to work at Tesla, where while their nominal pay might be lower, somewhere an average of about $45 per hour versus $66 per hour for an average UAW worker, profit sharing in the UAW industries is sharing profit in a negative profit industry. GM and Ford don't make money on EVs. Who cares about profit sharing with a money-losing company? There's no profit to share. Whereas when you look at a company like Tesla, where yes, the nominal wage might be 32% less, it's worth writing in that there are many tangibles and intangibles, especially Tesla's total compensation thanks to stock comp. Elon Musk has argued that many line workers at Tesla have become millionaires simply because of stock-based compensation. Consider the following intangibles. At Tesla, you're at a growing company versus dying. Future of sustainability versus legacy, green versus not, tech pioneer versus not, engineering pioneer versus the legacy industries of not being engineering pioneers. Plus the tangibles, stock comp, upward mobility in a massively growing business and industry, the resume builder of working at Tesla, and the endless educational potential. It's worth remembering that when I sat down with the head of investor relations at Tesla, they made it clear one of the beauties about working with Tesla, whether as an employee or as a contractor, is you learn from Tesla's new engineering. And so then your business or your resume grows as Tesla grows. A quick example are Tesla's heat pumps. These are a pure Tesla innovation, and their manufacturers have to learn with Tesla how to actually manufacture these. But now those manufacturers can go to other potential vendors and say, hey, look, we were able to make this with Tesla. We can make something special with you too. Now, of course, the UAW's leadership responds and says that competition is just the code word for a race to the bottom. Basically, how low can you sell products and rip off your workers? That's the argument of the UAW. They say that their greatest concern is the working class individual. The unions go as far as calling this price gouging by greedy corporations. This is, of course, leading individuals like Bernie Sanders to come out and say that corporations, it's time to stop and end your greed. It's time to sit down and negotiate fair contracts. This Vermont senator, of course, calling out the CEOs who are each making over $20 million a year. Now, ignoring the CEO compensation, the companies have about a 4% profit margin, including their legacy businesses, and the stock market is pricing them as if they're trending towards bankruptcy. But yeah, there's probably an argument to be made about matching the CEO compensation with the success of not just the legacy business, but the legacy averaged in with EV business. And of course, this is why 13,000 workers are now on strike, and that's expected to grow before it ends up getting resolved. Josh Hawley of Missouri ended up complaining that Biden's push for EVs was to blame for poor corporate profits at these businesses, and Biden said that the companies have made some significant offers, but ultimately, I believe that the companies should end up going further to ensure corporate profits also mean record contracts for the UAW.
The point here is obvious. Tesla not only dominates the EV market, but because of these strikes, they're likely to dominate the market even more, because the strikes could lead prices for legacy vehicles to go up, supply to be constrained, which also contributes to prices going up, which makes Teslas more relatively affordable. But it also likely leads to more talent drain from people waking up at the legacy autos that the legacy autos aren't your long-term solution for a great career like they used to be. Instead, the next great career could be at Tesla, which leads to more innovating for Tesla and ultimately a greater moat for Tesla.
Next, we have to talk about the Federal Reserve, who has their press conference and release of the new summary of economic projections, which will show projections going all the way out to 2026. That's a big deal. It'll be the first time we'll see those this Wednesday. That's the 20th. The Federal Reserve, by some, is widely expected to go dovish, potentially signaling that no further hikes are needed, and Morgan Stanley says the peak is in. 5.375, that's it. And maybe things will change between now and November 1st when the next Fed meeting is, but they don't believe it. Instead, Morgan Stanley encouraged us to focus on little subtle changes in the language, such as going from indeterminate the extent of additional policy firming to changing that sentence to remove additional and just say in determining the extent of policy firming that could be appropriate. In addition, the Fed might choose to remove the word highly from their highly attentive to inflation risks, somewhat signaling that the Fed is less concerned about inflation risks and guiding towards a soft landing with a softer message to individuals and to institutions. The Fed is also expected to comment on what's now being dubbed the Fed's policy paradox. Essentially, that when rates are so high, you end up crushing innovation. And that's the last thing you would want. Because logic would tell you that, hey, if demand is still strong, you should keep raising rates. But now there's a paradoxical argument, one that says too high of rates could undermine inflation fighting because you end up restricting supply, keeping prices high. That's a problem. And guess what? It's literally happening. Everyone remember Enphase? I certainly do. And guess what Enphase told us in their last earnings call? They made it clear that they don't actually expect to lower prices. Instead, they'll just restrict supply. They use contract manufacturing, so they could just call up their contract manufacturers and go, hey, pump out less microinverters this month. It's not like they own the factories and they pay the payroll whether or not the factory is running. That's very different from Tesla. Tesla owns the vertically integrated manufacturing stack. That encourages Tesla to lower prices because they're paying for the factories and people anyway. Whereas with Enphase, Enphase has the choice to spend the money or not. They choose to just restrict supply. The problem with this is when businesses restrict supply, they spend less time innovating and making their manufacturing processes more efficient. This could end up leading to longer-term entrenched inflation. This is exactly the opposite of what the Fed wants to see happen.
Okay, now listen, I know that a lot of people are just going to go, hey, Kevin, are you just trying to dig up some more bullish articles once again suggesting, oh, the Fed's definitely going to pause? You know, I get it. People have that suspicion, but here's the reality. When Nick T and Fed economists are talking about this kind of stuff, often they're trying to pre-signal the flip that the Fed is actually trying to engineer. And it's working. We're seeing the Fed funds terminal rate trend down at the same time as oil prices are now going up. This is a sign that the Fed is communicating, manipulating the market. It's really important to pay attention to these. This is where we came up with the whole Nike swoosh from. Like, the whole Nike swoosh was based on this gradual transition of acceptance of, okay, inflation's going away, and the Fed's slow transition. That's why we still believe in the Nike swoosh.
So far, things have been okay. Factory construction has almost doubled in the past year, with its contribution to gross domestic product hitting the highest level in 1981, which is a sign that we don't yet have a lack of supply coming online, which makes sense because everybody wanted to fulfill the demand that was coming in during COVID. But the problem was we didn't have enough factories. Now no company wants to be caught flat-footed again, where when demand skyrockets, maybe when interest rates fall in the future, demand skyrockets again, these businesses want to be able to provide the products and services that are being demanded of them. So they're investing in infrastructure. But at some point, too high of interest rates does the opposite. And it actually destroys supply chains because it increases the cost of actually investing in new factories and new technologies. Now, that doesn't necessarily harm every company. Take, for example, mega caps like Microsoft. Microsoft pays an average of 3.3% in interest. They pay about $492 million a year in interest. But guess what? They make about twice that in interest, because they're making over 5% on their cash, depositing their money into money market funds, reiterating that the rich are getting richer and innovation, especially at smaller levels, actually gets crimped in this topsy-turvy environment we're in. Where does this leave us now? Well, big benefits towards big companies and a potential that the Federal Reserve may end up flip-flopping, keeping rates at 5.375 at the midpoint and starting to work towards cutting in 2024. When? Nobody knows. But what we do know is the Fed's terminal rate projections based on the bond market have recently come off their peaks and are starting to rotate down again. Downside though, 5-year break-even and 5-year forward break-even both starting to trend up again. This leads a lot to wonder, how would Donald Trump respond to the Federal Reserve? Here you go.
The Federal Reserve is obviously independent, but I wonder, Mr. President, if you are re-elected, would you direct your Federal Reserve chair to lower interest rates?
Well, you know that I put a lot of pressure on him. It was outside pressure because nobody knows whether or not you can really do that. But I did, because I thought his interest rates were too high, and he ultimately dropped his interest rates, the same gentleman, as you know. But it was a lot of pressure. I mean, I was very active on that. Right now, interest rates are very high. They're too high. People can't buy homes, they can't do anything. I mean, they can't borrow money. The banks don't have the money. The banks aren't lending the money. The banks, by the way, Chase Manhattan Bank, Bank of America, they discriminate against conservatives. It's a disgrace, and they shouldn't be allowed to. And I'm going to do something about that. But you take a look at banks throughout the country, and I think because of the regulators, but you take a look at Bank of America and Chase, they discriminate against conservatives.
What's
and
the
Republicans.
Evidence for that, Mr. President?
Oh, we'll give you plenty of evidence.
Okay, all right. Well, let's stay on track with this question, though. So just to be very clear, if you were reelected, would you direct your Fed chair to lower interest rates?
It depends. Depends where inflation is. But I would get inflation down, because drill we must.
Mr. President, are you going to appoint a new Fed chair if you're reelected?
Well, I guess he would have 2 years left or something like that, so we'll see.
But, okay, all right.
You know the word jawboning? I did a lot of jawboning against him. And he ultimately lowered interest rates.
This is Donald Trump suggesting that Joe Biden is not jawboning Jerome Powell, that it takes someone aggressive like Donald Trump to make sure that Jerome Powell is reined in. Of course, this is Donald Trump suggesting that. Others say no, Jay Powell is doing just fine under the leadership of Joe Biden. That's ultimately for everyone individually to decide. Recently, there's also been talk that Donald Trump might have hinted at a woman vice president. A lot of folks suggesting they like the concept because Donald Trump says he'd like the concept of a woman vice president. This is interesting because it could suggest a lean towards someone like Nikki Haley, potentially less aggressive than the Vivek Ramaswamy that some are hoping for. Putting potentially two bulls together might not exactly be as the balance Donald Trump is looking for, say some. Though others say, hey, don't suggest that Nikki isn't aggressive, she's a fighter as well. Although Nikki might have a little bit more of that political experience, obviously, obviously, than somebody like Ramaswamy, who could once again help balance Donald Trump out. Though then again, plenty say that Donald Trump has political experience now, given that he was president for 4 years. On the flip side, some people say that, look, you need one person who's the good cop and one person who's the bad cop to lead a strong negotiation. It's very difficult to get anything done when you have two bad cops. Now, remember how Donald Trump is trying to get the judge in the Georgia trial to recuse herself over alleged bias, specifically setting Donald Trump's trial to begin the day before Super Tuesday, which is expected to be televised. That is, the trial is expected to be televised. And she also worked for the same law firm that used to employ Hunter Biden. Yes, Hunter Biden was actually an attorney. Well, this judge is apparently now facing so many threats that marshals are now escorting her. U.S. marshals are escorting her when she goes to get lunch in the courthouse, something that has very rarely occurred for judges. So increased judicial protection here. Now, Jack Smith is suggesting he needs a narrowly tailored gag order against Donald Trump at the same time, because Donald Trump is apparently trying to intimidate witnesses by suggesting he'll pay for their legal defense costs if they, so to speak, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, testify nicely against him, or maybe even for him. Also, you see that people on the right are arguing this is just yet again another attempt for the Department of Justice to censor an American president. If they can censor an American president, how much can they censor and investigate us? Of course, the left is now counter-arguing, going, hey, well, they're finally coming after Hunter Biden on lesson charges, given that others have sort of lapsed, and now maybe eventually this will get done. But first, Congress is more focused on, oh, that's right, another government shutdown debate. Yes, literally, Kevin McCarthy and Republicans are delaying work on Hunter Biden because of a potential government shutdown. As usual, which is a story that not only happened during the debt ceiling crisis, which is crazy because you'd think it'd finally be over, but also happens every year right before September 30th, when the government's fiscal calendar year ends and they have to extend the budget or approve the budget for the next year. You have some who say, look, we'll go for extending the budget and signing a budget as long as we get haircuts to current spending levels. That's a very common Republican stance. Whereas on the flip side, now you have Kevin McCarthy going, folks, we can't go through this again. This is self-sabotage to the Republican Party. We need to get bigger priorities handled now. Of course, that doesn't stop individual Republicans like Scott Perry from saying, ain't doing it unless there are haircuts. And quite frankly, a lot of Americans are so fed up with how the government spends over 50% of its revenues on entitlement programs, which of course do include things like Social Security, which individuals have paid into. People are so frustrated that the government does not operate like a household. That is, why do we have to balance our debts and the government can just print more money? This unsustainable government spending has to stop. Lead to a smaller government is the argument of many. Others say, just keep kicking the can down the road. Maybe the artificial intelligence revolution will boost our GDP such that our debt will end up being nominal in the future. And while that is possible, it probably makes sense to balance the budget before getting there, just in case it doesn't happen, we don't end up having a BRICS revolution and a collapse of America as the leading country in the world. On Ukraine, Biden is expected to host Zelensky at the White House this week, as, of course, Zelensky is asking for not only more money, but also now long-range missiles, specifically the Army Tactical Missile Systems, or ATACMS. That Ukraine has been asking for a very long time. These weapons, by the way, are long-range guided missiles. They're fired from MLRS rocket launch pods and launchers. They carry an about 500-pound frag warhead, fragmentation warhead. Think about it like a giant grenade, and have a maximum range of about 300 kilometers, or about 186 miles. These should not at all be confused with intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs, which have ranges of thousands of miles. Instead, this is a distance, though, that could be practically functional for Ukraine, given that Ukraine would be able to strike Sevastopol, a critical Black Sea port in Crimea controlled by the Russians, from the edge of Kherson. This is a big deal because it does mean Ukraine would be able to strike over those mine and trench fields, making it very difficult to gain progress into Russian-controlled territory. You've got senators like Collins and Graham calling for just a small portion of these long-range missiles. Top of that, the IMF is now estimating that 90% of the oil and gas production that comes from Ukraine actually arises from Eastern Ukraine in the Dnipro and Donetsk regions. This is a potential, well, desire of Russia to control those natural gas and oil-rich regions that may be one of the reasons why the United States is fighting so hard to preserve that particular area, limiting Russian access to these oil and gas fields. Elizabeth Warren is now being asked to apologize to Elon Musk because she complained that Elon Musk was basically moderating the Ukrainian war by preventing Ukraine from being able to attack Sevastopol with Starlink and controlling their drones. Elon Musk responds and says, Whoa, international law does not allow me to unilaterally make that decision. If y'all wanted me to turn on Starlink so Ukraine could go attack deeper into Russian-controlled territory, that's on the U.S. government, but they didn't give me permission to do that, so I just followed the law. Other news, the SEC says Binance is not cooperating with the SEC's investigation. Binance is accused of not cooperating with the SEC and continuing to use Sifu, a custody service of the international arm of Binance, and the SEC says, hey, look, we've been asking for a ton of stuff, and all you've given us so far have been 220 documents, many of which are just unintelligible screenshots and documents without dates and signatures. The concern here is that CZ himself probably has a lot of control over Binance US assets, which is exactly what the SEC is trying to prevent another FTX disaster. Binance, of course, argues that this is just clickbait FUD and is not true. Binance pulling a classic defense here, arguing that the SEC is just conducting a phishing expedition. Quick primer on that, that's just legal code for saying that, hey, we think what the SEC is asking for is not reasonably relevant to their scope of the investigation. In response to this, the SEC is now moving to unseal any documents that they get their hands on from Binance. Now, this is a 4D chess move. This means that everyone will be able to see the documents that the SEC is actually reviewing. Remember, the SEC is accusing Binance of a lack of transparency. By pulling this move, taking documents and then throwing them into the public light, the SEC, with judicial approval, would basically be able to say, hey, look, world, we asked, this is what they gave us. Here's what we asked for, here's what they gave us. You make up your own decision. Basically, the SEC here is trying to pull off a trial against Binance via the court of public opinion. Now, while it's unlikely for any major Binance fans to actually care, and most things will still get written off as FUD, especially since a lot of people don't like Gary Gensler or the SEC, and they're frustrated that the SEC has taken so long to protect individuals, especially against actual fraud, especially when you look at other companies that have collapsed, the SEC isn't here with clean hands either. Everybody's kind of fallen behind the eight ball. And Taiwan Semiconductors is apparently nervous about demand, citing potentially a weaker economy, slower China, and likely slower cell phones, PCs, and durable sales. This is not great for a company like ASML as well, although ASML might just sell their products to Intel, since there's like a 2-year wait for ASML products anyway. However, it did lead stocks to slightly sell off in the chips industry, because there's concern that all of the AI buzz is just a big bubble, and TSM manufactures a lot of chips, especially NVIDIA GPUs. However, it is possible that while AI is booming, which is exactly what Taiwan Semiconductors told us in their last earnings call, that AI chip demand from cloud service providers and companies like Tesla, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, otherwise, is booming, it's entirely possible that other segments are collapsing, again, like cell phones, PCs, and durables, which are things like washing machines and, well, dishwashers. And we all know that real estate sales have plummeted. Look at a market like Boise. Real estate sales are down 74% year over year. Now, that's not prices, those are nominal sales. But it just means less people are moving, which means less people are getting new appliances, and you end up with downward pressure on across-the-board chip demand. On top of that, software companies featuring AI are still struggling to figure out how to make a profit. Snowflake can't figure it out yet, and they're uncertain about the future of AI profitability. The current ones who are making profit, again, are the cloud-based ones, the, again, Microsoft, Amazon, Googles, and then, of course, the underlings like the NVIDIA. But look at a company like Adobe. Adobe just fell because their AI tools weren't really boosting revenue. They're expected to raise prices again on November 1st, which they just did 18 months ago. So a lot of people are like, oh, are you going to start cannibalizing demand? And then we're going to see lower user numbers, which could be a risk to a company growing about 5 to maybe 10% projected. Beer industry executives are apparently warning that Bud Light may soon disappear from store shelves in places like 7-Eleven, Quick Trip, and Walmart. Bud Light sales are already down somewhere around 27%. That's old news, but some GMs of local Anheuser-Busch distributors are suggesting that the boycott is lasting a lot longer than expected. Maybe Bud Light thought the woke movement might end up blowing over, but it has not. In other news, some Vegas teens filmed themselves driving a stolen vehicle into the back of Andres Prosp's bicycle as he was riding his bike on the side of the road. Apparently, his wife and daughter received an Apple Watch alert and ended up finding his lifeless body. This video obviously speaks to a greater problem in America, that people would even find it acceptable to attack somebody with a vehicle while they're riding a bike, let alone film it. It's a complete disgrace, and it's a sign that our criminal justice system needs substantial work. Now, it's worth noting that video of this bicycle attack with a vehicle didn't surface until August 29th. Of course, then there's an easy way to get popularity on social media, and that is to take screenshots of news articles from earlier in August where people didn't know yet that these individuals violently attacked the biker with a car, and they throw pictures up on Twitter going, I can't believe the mainstream media wouldn't mention that he was attacked. That data wasn't known yet at the time. The video wasn't available yet at the time. But if you want popularity on Twitter, something wild is that Community Notes doesn't actually catch up with this kind of stuff, usually for a good 48 hours. And by then, people have got 20, 30, 40, 50,000 likes making fun of the MSM. But then again, I personally think that sometimes the depth that you get on just kind of scrolling through Twitter, it's not that great. Armed man also threatened to assassinate RFK. The individual showed up to an RFK event dressed in a black EMS shirt, but then having a U.S. Marshals badge, which is kind of weird. Like, why would you show up with an EMS shirt and a Marshals badge? Like, at least align the two. But anyway, showed up at a Hispanic Heritage event as a U.S. Marshal, dressed as a U.S. Marshal, with two loaded cross-draw shoulder-strapped firearms. The man claimed to be employed for the event, but RFK security didn't recognize the individual and immediately called LAPD. RFK's security is Gavin DeBaker and Associates. It's a company that RFK hired to protect him. They do private security. Some people are suggesting this individual was so loony that maybe this was just a marketing stunt by Gavin DeBaker. Others say no, RFK just desperately wants Secret Service protection, so he's pulling stunts to try to get Secret Service protection. Those on the right say, or those who support RFK say, no, this is just the Biden administration trying to step on RFK to prevent legitimizing his campaign and providing him Secret Service protection. Instead, now here's a real person coming to try to assassinate him. Who knows? Also, a lot of you have really appreciated my Daily Wealth emails. My Daily Wealth emails are something you can click on the links down below for. They're totally free. And what I'm going to do now is we're every single day, my goal is at 4 a.m. to release a bottom line report. And in the daily bottom line report, which is what you've just been watching, I want to include a snippet of the Daily Wealth email. So here's an example. One of the Daily Wealth emails we sent out was the question, how can I make sure that I'm successful? And my argument is that in capitalism, we are incentivized to come up with new ideas. But the problem is those new ideas often come with massive inefficiencies. And the beauty about capitalism is those who succeed are the ones who find ways to provide value or to make things more efficient. If you start now, whether you fail fast or you equip yourself to provide value quickly, if you start now by asking yourself, what can I do to provide more value to my company, to my boss, to the company that I'm helping start? whatever you can do to ask yourself, how can I provide more value? How can I make things less inefficient and more efficient? The more of a success you'll end up becoming. This is where some go as far in twisting Kennedy's line and suggesting, ask not what capitalism can do for you. If you want to succeed, ask what you can do for capitalism. I hope you enjoyed the bottom line report. Give me some feedback in the comments down below, and we'll see you again at 4 a.m. tomorrow.
Why not advertise these things that you told us here? I feel like nobody else knows about this.
We'll try a little advertising and see how it goes.
Congratulations, man. You have done so much. People love you. People look up to you.
Kevin Paffrath there, financial analyst and YouTuber. Meet Kevin. Always great to get your take.